listening to London's radio station.
Danny Baker on BBC London 94.9. Weekday afternoons from 3.
Kath Mullendry coming and greasing around our guests. I never thought I'd live so long. And it's one in the eye, frankly, for Stephen Fry and Richard E. Grant, who printed up that chair in the last couple of days. And, you know, Kath didn't do it then. And she really was... She was actually bowing from the waist. I've never seen this. That's our drive time, folks.
And she actually said, "You're gorgeous."
She didn't say
she
that.
Did. She did.
Oh, Colin Firth, who's sitting opposite me now. I can't apologise enough. We do, you know, we do what we can around here. And one
I
of the things... sorry, mate, I spun your microphone up. Even better. What? It was.
I thought you were just bowing at the waist there.
No, I wasn't bowing at the waist. I'm crumbling under the weight. There's something. There's a slight difference in
there.
Well, no, I was talking about being tired. But if you will, if you must. Yeah, Colin Firth, good enough to be with us for the next 20 minutes or so. And Colin, why don't you lay it upon us? What are we all gathered here? Because it's unlikely we'd have got together this afternoon without the microphone and the aerial on the roof. What are we here to discuss and celebrate and promote?
I'm busy walking around trying to make people go and see a film called Where the Truth Lies.
Okay, yes, of course, yeah.
This is sort of noirish psychological thriller, if you like. Myself and Kevin Bacon. And far too many people taking their clothes off. And,
oh, really? Yes, now all of a sudden people snap to attention.
Upsetting the American censors and that sort of thing.
And are you good in it, or you're even...
I'm excellent.
Yeah. I mean, character-wise.
Oh, I see.
What is the psychological pitch of the character?
No, I behave appallingly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's good, though, right? That's good.
I would say it is. I think people have seen enough of the other things. So,
yeah. Well, yeah. Don't get a chance to be off the
list. It's got to be more fun, though.
I'm sure.
It definitely is. It's certainly easier. Yeah.
Have you ever worked in heavy prosthetics? And I don't know why I leap there, but I think about monsters and stuff. Have you ever had to, you know, adopt...
I'm not going to discuss the nude scenes with you.
Let's come around to the actual physical idea of promoting a film like this, because I should imagine, and, you know, we've seen it in films and stuff, that it's contractual, and, of course, you know, you will have to go... I suspect this isn't the only date you've got today, and you've got to go around various places, as you say, and promote the hell out of things, and why not, if it's a quality product? But would you prefer to be one of those who sits in a hotel room and have people come to you? Because that looks like hell to me. Or would you rather do it this way?
No, the atmosphere gets rank after a while.
Yeah.
No, it's much better being taken from one end of the city to the other in the end.
Yeah.
I mean, it wears you out in its own way, but there's nothing worse than being stuck in that little room with 73-minute interviews.
Big poster behind you and everyone, and
Yeah, and you do actually become vaguely psychotic after a while. I mean, you can't, you know, the sound of your own voice. And most actors can relish it for a few hours, and then after a while it just...
What was the first time your star had risen enough that you actually had to do it, or were asked to do it, after, you know?
Your star doesn't have to have risen that high for people to want to make use of you to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to say, you know, a new series of so-and-so starts Monday, here's a guy who plays a cab driver in one of the episodes. You have to have a certain profile, I'd have thought, before this...
You're quite right, and I think probably it was either something like The English Patient or Shakespeare in Love, and being part of an ensemble.
Yeah.
I certainly was a long way from being the most luminous figure in either of those films.
No, nevertheless. You had your best show burgling clothes on to steal the thing, as I remember both of those. And how long do you have to spend on this? Sort of dwell on it, but, you know, we are dealing with tiredness today. And
It entirely depends. I got off quite lightly on this one, partly because I've been working away, Kevin Bacon has was taken up the burden to a very large extent, my co-star in this
film. Sure. Yeah.
So he did all of the work in North America, really, and some of the work here, he's been and gone.
You're a real, you're absolutely in demand for chat shows. Just looking at if it's on the Internet Movie Database, it says notable television appearances, and of course they could have gone anywhere. But there seems to be most of the major television shows in America. You seem to give good interview, or either you like it, or you whatever the deal is.
Lots of Regis and Kathy Lee.
Yeah, and Oprah's in there and stuff, and of course Saturday Night Live you've done, which I think pretty much is still, despite its ebbing and flying, the pinnacle of an actor's success, if they're asked to host that. How was that? Who was on when you were doing it?
It was a very exciting moment, actually. I mean, it's not for me to judge how the show came out. I don't think it was, you know, it had its moments. Nora Jones was the musical guest, which was fantastic.
So I just landed
on my feet with that, and she was just gorgeous. And
you have to be there all week, rehearsing, and it's a pretty tough gig in that way,
There is nothing else like it. Someone described it as being fired out of a cannon, and that's really exactly what it's like. You arrive, I can't quite remember exactly how it goes, but you arrive on a Monday, you have a brief chat with Lorne Michaels, who runs the show, and then the room fills up with absolutely everybody who participates in the show.
Uh-huh.
They fire ideas at you, and then suddenly you're off. And I think by Tuesday night, they are writing through the night.
Yeah.
These people, they work at night, basically. They become nocturnal because the show goes out at night.
And intimidating when you, you know... When you
terrifying. No, yeah. it's
once I hear live from New York, it's Saturday night with your host Colin Firth, and you...
Yeah. No, you just... If I'd had a revolver, I think that would have been a preferred option at that particular moment. So, no, basically, yeah, you're on. As Lorne Michaels said at the very, very beginning, the two reassuring things he had to say to me is, one, that you go out at 11:30 on a Saturday night,
mm-hmm.
not because... you're ready, but because it's 11:30.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that, don't worry, the worst that can happen is complete and total humiliation in front of about 50 million
Bless
people.
Bless you, Long. Thank you. Because that hadn't occurred.
It couldn't have been further from my mind. Uh-huh. And they don't even have a delay. They don't even have that 3-second delay.
Famously with the Moffat singer who had the wrong backing track playing for a live band. And But it went okay, yeah?
Well, yes, it did, I think. I mean, once, you know, you do all this nighttime stuff, and then before you know it, you're actually on.
Mm-hmm.
And they run with you. They grab you harshly.
Yeah.
There's a very tough lady who does the wardrobe, grabs you and runs with you behind a screen somewhere.
Yeah.
And your clothes are put together with Velcro so they can just them off you.
Oh.
Someone's standing there with a flashlight and someone else is standing there with a microphone saying 35 seconds, 32. And then the next thing you know, you've got a different wig on, different clothes, and they are pushing you onto the stage.
You know, we had Richard E. Grant sitting where you're sitting yesterday, whining on about his 5 times a week thing and the pressures and all of that. I wish you'd have been here to put it in perspective with a little of that. That is something.
It's quite something. Yeah. I mean, I don't have to do it every week, and I can't imagine how these people live under that pressure, really.
It kind of ties in, and I'd like to say it was part of a structured interview, but it kind of ties in with the movie, because you're playing part of a comedy duo there, yeah?
Well, it does tie in, actually, because those are
Sense
people...
Sense memory, was it?
Yeah, no, it just... I'm afraid, you know, playing that sort of rather venal, corrupt actor just came all too naturally.
Oh, really? It's not a composite of several...
it's just me.
VCAs who you've worked with over the years. Oh, is that what it is? Yeah.
I'm afraid so.
What kind of roles do you find you get offered more than others? You know, when I'm sure they're filtered out, but was there a period when you could have gone on buckling the swash or certainly being, a dashing good living, being dashing and all of that?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think right after Pride and Prejudice, there may have been one or two costume dramas, but I think people just didn't dare send them to me, really. I think there was an assumption that there's no way you're going to want to do that. There were one or two, but...
The industry can be quite dumb in that respect, can't it? You can, you know, say, oh, that's what he does. That's what he does.
But surprisingly enough, though, I've had quite a few people come at me with things saying, I thought you might want to try this because you've never done it before.
Uh-huh.
The trouble is, it's not just always up to some imaginative director.
No.
Films are very, very expensive, and people tend to want to minimise their risks.
Uh-huh.
So they want to buy something they can be sure of, not allow some person to experiment with versatility at their expense.
these days there must be a certain, I suppose deference is too strong a word. Do you take well to that? Do you like the structure around being a star? Because Balaam thought he saw you get out of a white limousine. Now, you were quick to squash that and said, there may have been a time, but remember the time when you thought...
It's going to have to be now. Now I've seen that white limo. I realise there's something missing in my life. I've got my very good friend Tony is waiting outside for me in his Mercedes. He's going to have to be a white limo next time, or he's fired.
I did remind Balaam that the only people you see getting out of white limos are hen parties.
Yeah, that's true.
But he was good enough to run it by.
On that Pride and Prejudice tip, that whole attention that you got just by coming out of the water in a wet shirt. Well, I mean, did you...
Yeah,
I mean, not just for that, but that's what every female always says. Oh, Colin Firth in that scene coming out of the water.
There's a little... Unless you're Kath Melendry bowing at the waist as she's
yes,
for a moment.
Yes, I mean, that's got to be kind of weird at first, because you think, well, I was wet.
Well, it is weird, because... I mean, partly because it wasn't intended. I dare say you can't contrive that sort of thing.
What do you mean it wasn't intended?
Well, it wasn't intended to create an effect.
Oh, I see.
It was just an ordinary bit of the story.
I thought you went up to the director and said, how about I come out the water?
Well, no, Mr. Darcy's feeling very hot. Jumps in ponds, you know. Mr. Darcy comes out of ponds, so he has to be wet. So.
Just on that, Colin, I know we've only got a limited time with you. What's the most uncomfortable you've ever been as an actor? As opposed to this moment accepted. What was the most uncomfortable you've ever been as an actor?
Oh, Christ. There's quite a few moments. being naked with Kevin Bacon has got to be up there.
Oh, you are? Of course, yes, you said this. Yes, yes. And what are the circumstances in the movie that lead you to being naked?
Tell us more about that.
You will have to watch the film because I'm afraid, you know, it's a bit of the film's dark secret lies in that particular scene.
I suppose people are leaping to this being either Abbott and Costello or Martin and Lewis being a 50s comedy duo, so is that...
You can put those to it if you wish. We have got no interest in anybody's estate coming after us and saying, how dare you suggest that
absolutely,
we got up to things
not.
Like that.
No, of course not.
And also, we didn't. You know, there's a novel that this is based on, and there are clear echoes of those sorts of people, but we kind of went our own way with it and created our own characters.
So it's a fictional duo.
Yes, a fictional duo of that ilk, set in that era. You know, Vegas, the Mafia, the Sands.
But did you have any of that in your mind when you were doing this?
Yeah, we did. No specific individuals, but definitely had that period in mind, very much so.
And how's the accent? The voice
No, I played a Brit. I wanted to play an American. That's how it was originally written. The director said, no, much, much more interesting if we get a bit of Mr. Yes. Darcy, and then it takes us all by surprise to see what you really get up to.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Have you ever done an American accent?
I have, yes, I have.
I'm not going to ask you to do it in front of me.
I've done it on stage a couple of times, mm-hmm. and I have done a couple of films, actually, where it's had to go at it, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And how many projects down the line are you now? Obviously, you know what you're doing next. How about, do you know what you're doing after that?
I don't. I'm not, you know, it all sort of changes. I mean, there are a lot of theoretical possibilities. Uh-huh. The thing about films is they're never that sure until you're actually standing on the film set shooting. Even then, you're never sure.
And are you restless now that you've reached a certain level that you can say, as I say, Richard was here yesterday, I remember Richard a while, and he's just directed. Now, if you bump into him and he says, oh, just directed, does that make you think, damn?
It does a bit, yes, yeah. It does. I think it's overdue that I kind of vary the act a bit now.
Uh-huh. And is there something you've always wanted to make?
No. I've never wanted to direct, actually. Somebody asked me to direct something about a year ago, and I thought, no, I don't do that.
Yeah.
And then somebody else came up with an idea, and it got me thinking. I thought, actually, maybe this could be...
Well, the three actors who have sat where you are, Julian Fellowes and Stephen Fry and Cliff Richard, have all just done it. So it's a club. But I think, as I always say to them, it must be so intimidating at first, though, when you have to shout action.
Oh, I think so. But it's very unusual to see a film made by an actor that's bad. The strike rate is incredible. If you look at Clint Eastwood's films and Robert Redford's films and Sean Penn's films and Tim Robbins' films.
I mean, Robert Robbins has had a couple of those. You know, there it is.
They get it right. Gary Oldman. I mean,
Why? Why? We do like directors, firstly.
Well, I like good directors, yes.
Yeah.
I like good directors, and I like, directors who are, you know, pleasant. I mean, it's, you know, whatever you require them to be. No, I mean, there's many different kinds of directors, probably, as there are people.
Who was helmed this one, as we say in the business?
This was Atta McGoyan, who is a director I respected for a very long time, uh-huh. and because he was so sort of clever and complex in his mm-hmm. work, I expected him to be difficult, and he wasn't. He was extremely approachable.
Does it always follow that a film, you said this is a psychological thriller and stuff, and you know, it sounds a little different from Nanny McPhee, but does it always follow that the lighter the story, the happier the set?
Because no.
It doesn't.
Absolutely not. In the case of Nanny McPhee, it was light and the film set was wonderful. And that may be something to do with telling stories for children, and there's something pure about that, and nobody was trying to be clever or outsmart anybody, dangerous or menacing or anything. It was just delighting.
But if you find yourself and offended, you should be on the set of, I don't know, Ace Ventura 3, The Return. That it doesn't necessarily just be a knockabout piece of...
Trying to look fun can be exhausting and irritating.
Yeah.
Put everyone in a terrible mood.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, because if you're not up for fun and you're supposed to be sort of chirpy and... I mean, what could be worse? What could put you in a worse mood? What if you're on your third week of night shoots and everyone's supposed to be having a ball, you know, and you're just not... So, and also comedy is difficult, and you know, a nuance of timing, it can be the difference between being, hilarious and being grating and embarrassing.
All right, just as we're winding up, just one on that, and mentioning, of course, something like Bridget Jones or Love Actually. Given the characters you're in it, do you ever look at other actors who and think, oh, I wish I had that, I could do that? I mean, not in a way, of course, to threaten the actor, but like, given the fight you have in Bridget Jones and stuff, would you like to be in the other side of it? Could you have just turned around and
said... No, I couldn't have just turned around, because I think if Hugh Grant's got a very unique gift of comic timing and a certain kind of delivery, and I think, you know, because it's... And I've very much on record as having said this before, that people mistake light or easy or insubstantial.
Absolutely,
in some
you bet,
it's,
yeah.
it's a huge mistake.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
that, well, I think what he does is actually nobody else can do at all.
No.
And since possibly the days of David Niven or Cary Grant, nobody can really achieve that.
Uh-huh.
It's that sort of level of perfect judgment is very hard to come by.
Well, Colin, we'll give all the details of the film out now. And just a couple of quickies to fire at you before you go. A film you would have, in history of film, you would have loved to have been in. What would you love to have been in?
Oh, I think, you know, any of those wonderful sort of film noirs, you know, it's films like...
This is noirish, you said, yeah?
It is noirish, and I'm part of it, well, the reason it appeals to me is that I would like to, I suppose my fantasy is to be in something like North by Northwest.
Well, you know the way Hollywood works, you will be.
They
haven't remade it for 25 minutes, so you probably will. Work on. Thank you very much indeed. I know you're on a giddy whirl, and I hope they all go as effortlessly as this.
Back to the limo.
To do with us. You bet. Yeah. Yeah, back to the limo, I understand. The Essex girls are waiting.
There better be a limo by the time I get out there.
By the way, Where the Truth Lies is out a week on Friday, and you know, you've splashed all over the posters. Just nicking one. When you see yourself on posters, do you turn away? You know,
it's usually not a pleasant spectacle. I don't like being overtaken by myself on buses. You know.
Colin, thanks ever so much.